Jara da Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Varadari Kunja Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Varadari Yashoda Nanana Bhaja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Bhaja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Bandha Chari Jamuna Tira Bandha Chari Jalata Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Varadari Yashoda Nanana Bhaja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanana Bhaja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tira Bandha Chari Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Babu Pada, Jaya Babu Pada, Babu Pada, Chula Babu Pada, Jaya Babu Pada, Jaya Babu Pada, Babu Pada, Chula Babu Pada. Hare Krishna. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text 22. We won't read the Sanskrit, it's quite long, but we will read the rest. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So this is in the chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that is entitled The Three Modes of Material Nature. And we're going to learn how we can go beyond these different modes that bind us here to the material world. So I'll read, I'll read the text first. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O son of Pandu, he who does not hate illumination, attachment, and delusion when they are present or long for them when they disappear, who is unwavering and undisturbed through all these reactions of the material qualities, remaining neutral and transcendental, knowing that the modes alone are active, who is situated in the self and regards alike happiness and distress, who looks upon a lump of earth, a stone, and a piece of gold with an equal eye, who is equal toward the desirable and the undesirable, who is steady, situated equally well in praise and blame, honor and dishonor, who treats alike both friend and enemy, and who has renounced all material activities, such a person is said to have transcended the modes of nature. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Arjuna submitted three different questions, and the Lord answers them one after another. In these verses, Krishna first indicates that a person transcendentally situated has no envy and does not hanker for anything. When a living entity stays in this material world embodied by the material body, it is to be understood that he is under the control of one of the three modes of material nature. When he is actually out of the body, then he is out of the clutches of the material modes of nature. But as long as he is not out of the material body, he should be neutral. He should engage himself in the devotional service of the Lord so that his identity with the material body will automatically be forgotten. When one is conscious of the material body, he acts only for sense gratification. But when one transfers the consciousness to Krishna, sense gratification automatically stops. One does not need this material body, and he does not need to accept the dictations of the material body. The qualities of the material modes in the body will act, but as spirit soul, the self is aloof from such activities. How does he become aloof? He does not desire to enjoy the body, nor does he desire to get out of it. Thus transcendentally situated, the devotee becomes automatically free. He need not try to become free from the influence of the modes of material nature. The next question concerns the dealings of a transcendentally situated person. The materially situated person is affected by so-called honor and dishonor offered to the body, but the transcendentally situated person is not affected by such false honor and dishonor. He performs his duty in Krishna consciousness and does not mind whether a man honors or dishonors him. He accepts things that are favorable for his duty in Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, he has no necessity of anything material, either a stone or gold. He takes everyone as his dear friend who helps him in the execution of Krishna consciousness, and he does not hate his so-called enemy. He is equally disposed and sees everything on an equal level because he knows perfectly well that he has nothing to do with this material existence. Social and political issues do not affect him because he knows the situation of temporary upheavals and disturbances. He does not attempt anything for his own sake. He can attempt anything for Krishna, but for his personal self, he does not attempt anything. By such behavior, one becomes actually transcendentally situated. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about transcendence today. This seems to be a trend in the world right now to try to become a little bit transcendental to what's going on. So many different things happening in the material world, not very favorable. But when people think of transcendence, they think of out of this world experience, something beyond any material experience that they've ever had with this material body or mind, something beyond this normal limited consciousness that we have because we're in this material body, as it's describing here. But there's many different conceptions of what transcendence is. For instance, in the yogi world, you can usually picture a yogi, transcendental yogi in trance, probably in seclusion, probably taking vows of silence or different austerities, trying to fix his mind on something. And the religion is, they have their transcendental personalities. They have their saints and nuns, very much into renunciation. Does anybody know if that nun comes from renunciation? I don't know, anyway. But it sounds like it. Also, they can disconnect themselves from material sense activities so that they're not distracted from their prayer. They're very much absorbed in prayer. And then there's mystic personalities. They're becoming a bit rare species these days, but there used to be people that actually had superhuman power that could actually perform miracles, that could actually elevate themselves. When I first thought of something transcendental, I thought of someone flying around on a magic carpet or something, which people actually could do at different times. Now we... not so transcendental in that mystic department. And then there's different meditation groups that offer all kinds of different means of getting relief from the material stress that we get just by being here in this material world. I know when I was first in the Boulder Temple, one yogi and some of his friends came. His name was Yogi Bhajan, I think. They all had big white turbans. And he was I was told that he could actually produce rasgullas from his ear or something. And so there's different goals for these different transcendentalists. If you want a lot of rasgullas, well, that's one thing. But then there's many that most of them want to get liberated. They want the relief. They want to get out of this material disturbances and distractions, things that bring them down. Costs a lot of money to live here, too, a lot of hard work. And then there's other people that might even want to increase their material life so that they have a better condition, some kind of a heavenly existence here. Others, like the Buddhists, they neither want to be here nor there. So they just kind of want to vanish, which solves some problems, I guess. And then there's those Hare Krishnas that stand on the corner of 13th and University, and they sing and they dance and they give out their food and they... of course, give out books. And so what is their goal? Their goal is to perfect their love for God. And their goal is ultimately to be accepted back to that spiritual realm where they came from. So this verse here is giving a description, some symptoms of one who actually is transcendental. It goes a little bit deeper than the external, the look of a person, but it actually explains a lot about the consciousness and the mentality of a transcendentalist, being very equal-minded and neutral to so many things going on. So these symptoms go very deep. We understand that they're not this body. Without understanding that very first thing, one cannot even become neutral or become equal to anybody else. Their vision will not be clear to see everyone as a soul and not just the material body. When I was in Los Angeles as a devotee, we would go downtown and chant on the streets for 10 hours a day. And many times they didn't appreciate our transcendental chanting, and they would throw water from the buildings on us, and they would spit on us, and they would, mainly their mantra, our mantra was Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, and their mantra was, go get a job, get real, get your a real life, and so we did after a while. How many of you have jobs in this room, material jobs? Many, yeah, right. So we actually did get a job. But we didn't compromise our chanting and our dancing and our connection to Krishna. We can remain transcendental because of this process of bhakti, where we can get off the material platform and we can understand our soul inside. We're not really willing to sacrifice our this consciousness, this Krishna consciousness, for the consciousness of the materialists that are running around simply trying to somehow or other work hard enough to enjoy. We're not willing to sacrifice our consciousness. We work, but we work in the consciousness that we're doing this for Krishna. And so this is one of the symptoms of the transcendentalist. The vision is very different, because we can see that these people in the material world with this consciousness are trying to enjoy, they're simply getting snagged. They're getting snagged in a net. And there's a song here I'd like to say that explains this very nicely. O fish-like soul, why have you fallen into the entangling nets of Maya? You have not understood that by being bound up by those nets, you will have to remain in this material world for a long, long time. After becoming a captive in Maya's snare due to your desires for very insignificant enjoyments, you remain transformed in a spiritually diseased condition, punishable just like a disobedient servant. Now, by the power of devotional service, always remain subservient to Lord Krishna, swimming and frolicking freely in the nectarine ocean of Krishna Prema. So the devotee with transcendental eyes sees the snare out there, this illusion of temporary enjoyment, and we don't go there. We avoid that. Although we're in the material world, we avoid that by devotional service, which is very, very, very powerful and can actually give us that pleasure simply with these simple processes of singing and dancing. There's a prominent member of our society, and he lives in San Diego, and his father was a very nice worker in the material world, and he worked, I think, until he's in his late 60s, like most people do, and then he had a retirement class, I mean, like a party or something, and he had to give a speech. And he said, you know, now I'm retiring after working for this company for so long and this and that. And he goes, and my son, he retired at the age of 17. He became a Hare Krishna devotee. He says, little intelligent, yes? And because we understand that we can retire. We can retire from this rat race of trying to pursue this happiness that is coming and going, and it's not the true happiness that is satisfying to the soul. So it's not that we don't act, but we learn how to act in Krishna consciousness. So we retire that material consciousness and replace it with the very joyful and high consciousness, transcendental consciousness of understanding that we're a servant of the most beautiful Lord, Sri Krishna. There are many other transcendental offers out there, as we discussed. And you can choose from many of them. You can choose the yoga postures or the pranayama, or there's one group that does electric prodding. They give you some jolt to help you transcend. and then there's fasting and austerities like that. And there's secret mantras. I think it's about $50 now to get a secret mantra, which will help you in some way or another. And then the latest is you can become transcendental just by hugging. That's a new one that I came across up when I was in India. Anyway, in Krishna consciousness, we've chosen a process of learning how to engage our senses in the highest activity, which is loving service, transcendental loving service to the Supreme Lord. And Krishna, he has the final say on these matters. And he says that just by this transcendental loving service, you can cross over the material modes of nature and you can actually come to me. So he has set the requirements for actually coming back to him, if that's your goal. If you really want to transcend and get out of this material world for good and all, this is the process that Krishna is recommending. And he recommends this loving transcendental service. This isn't the material love. This is a very pricey love. It's a very rare commodity because it isn't wanting anything in return. It's not caring for your own sense gratification. in that reciprocation. You're just thinking of how you can please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it is pricey. It means full surrender of that consciousness, which we are habituated to have. We're born in the material world, and we're looking for sense gratification, you know. Oh, you cute little thing. It starts off right away, you know. Yes, you're wonderful. Your body's wonderful, and you need everything for it. So it takes a while to transform that consciousness, to transcend these habituations in the material world. And it's not easy to develop this loving relationship again. Many of you in this room have had a loving relationship at some time that was broken for some reason. And it's kind of hard to repair that broken relationship. It takes a lot of work. And we've broken off our relationship with Krishna many, many, many lifetimes ago, extremely long time. So it's even that much harder we have to become acquainted again with the Supreme Lord. And we do that by hearing and chanting and glorifying him. And we begin to remember, oh yes, he is the most attractive, wonderful person to fall in love with. And then you have to also maybe apologize when you have a relationship problem, right? To apologize, and you have to make some vows, some commitments of devotion. And so this is all going on in this practice that Srila Prabhupada is engaging us in, this practice of bhakti, to revive this this lost love. But it does come natural, and it's a very joyful process by singing and dancing. And it comes from the heart. We have to reform that heart, which is very easily done in a group with everybody working together, encouraging each other to go very deep in your heart and to revive that love for the Supreme Lord. And then on that level, when we come to that level of really wanting Krishna, turning to him, then he will say, yes, come to me. He'll accept your service. And it's not till then, not till we get to that transcendental level, where we actually begin to experience that, yes, he's pulling me in. And you experience a wonderful feeling of an experience of out of this world, of transcendence. In this description of the symptoms of transcendentalists, it describes a lot about this equal vision of actually not seeing people on the bodily platform and not worrying about the only dishonor and honor for yourself. I have a little story that describes the problems when you misjudge people by their bodily looks. We have very imperfect senses, and we have a tendency to judge by how someone, what their body looks like. And so there's a story, it's a true story. There was a church, and they were about to get a new minister. And it was on a Sunday, and so they're all going to be introduced to their new minister. So they all go there, and they're all filing in. You know, you get greeted at the door at the Christian church. And they noticed that there was a person laying on the steps with a bag and a sack, and looked like some kind of a bum. And so they're all going to the church, and that person comes in and sits in the front row, and they ask the person, please sit in the back row. And then the minister comes up and says, you know, this is a very special day, and I'd like to welcome all the new guests, just like we do every Sunday. So please, you know, welcome so-and-so. Yes, over your first time here, very nice. And then they say, now I'd like to introduce our new minister. All of a sudden, that bum that was on the front step gets up, walks to the front, to the podium, and says that I'm your new minister. And they all kind of gulp a little bit, and he starts to give his first sermon. And he says the experience that he had, that I came here, no one asked me who I was, if I needed anything. No one greeted me. They asked me to sit in the back. And then, you know, they didn't ask me, you know, are you first time? They didn't give me any, anything. And he says, I don't think this is a church. I think it is a social gathering. And then he says, then he reads a passage from the Bible that says how one should treat everyone equally, how everyone should see, you know, what take the care of everyone around you and meet their needs and how to treat a person like that. And then he says that when are you going to become disciples of Jesus Christ? And so in the same way, when are we going to transcend and actually have that real vision of seeing everyone as a spirit soul, that everyone has this opportunity in this lifetime to transcend? And so this symptom of transcendence can go even to another level. And that level is to actually want to deliver everyone else and to help them become higher and higher and to be relieved of the material distresses of this world. There's one five-year-old devotee named Prahlad Maharaj, and he actually pleased his Lord Krishna. And he was given a benediction that, yes, now I will liberate you. You know, is that nice? And he says, the boy says, I don't want to be liberated. Here he's got an opportunity to transcend totally. He says, how can I leave when I see all these other living entities that they're suffering here in the material world? And he chose to actually stay there and to help deliver everybody else. So this is the real highest of the transcendental work of the devotee. And we work very hard to do that. So we try to treat everyone as spirit soul and not just this body. And there's some other nice features about being transcendental. First of all, when you become a devotee of Krishna and start this process, you open up a bank account. It's a transcendental bank account. Don't worry, there's no fluctuations. It doesn't have anything to do with the stock market. No, there's no loss. There's only gain. And it actually depends all on the consciousness. You put deposits of service, and the service is never lost. You don't lose a penny. And the more transcendental you do it, the more with love and consciousness in it, the more interest you get. The next lifetime you simply take off from there. So it's a wonderful bank account that you immediately open up, and you can always dip in and enjoy that pleasure, especially the next lifetime. You just continue on. You don't have to worry about coming up through the material stages, but immediately have the knowledge that, yes, I should serve Krishna. So this is one of the effects. In Vrindavan, and there's a holy name bank. I don't know if you've ever been to it. It's at the Yugalakeshwar temple, and you can go there, and it's a little differently arranged right now, but it used to be that you could actually see all the different deposits of people that have written the holy name. Some have written on tiny pieces of rice this big in Sanskrit, the whole names of God. Beautiful, beautiful script written in books and books. People write the holy name, the holy mantra in books in all beautiful ways, and they paint pictures with the holy name. Actually, we have many things in there from our ashram deposited in there. And so the Krishna sees all these things, even the little grain of rice and the big books and everything, all the same. And in our transcendental bank account, he's seeing that, yes, just that endeavor, that even if you don't finish something in Krishna consciousness, we were just reading that it's always there. You get the benefit. So this transcendental bhakti yoga is a wonderful thing. And even in this lifetime, just see the assets of being a transcendentalist. Like we were describing relationships, how difficult that might be. But if you are on that relationship of soul to soul, it becomes much easier to have relationships with people. Remind each other, yes, I'm not this body. It's just temporary. Or, you know, have a little problem here and there, but we're all working for the same thing. We're working for Krishna. So it makes your relationships much easier, which are a problem in the material world. Also, incidental occurrences might come up. You know, someone dies in the family, or dog this or this or whatever. And the transcendentalist is describing in this verse how you can not be affected, not disturbed, because you understand the nature of the soul and of this temporary existence. And then also, you actually get a potency. Krishna is allowed to give you a potency that you can go and you can take matter, talking about mystics, you can actually take matter and turn it to spirit, just like the food that you're going to eat in a few minutes. It was regular butternut squash and eggplant and what else we cut up today, tomatoes and everything. It was just regular produce. But now when you go out there, it is transformed into spiritual food, food that will go inside and purify you. Because the whole process of bhakti yoga goes very deep. It goes and purifies the heart and begins to help you remember who you really are. And so all these benefits, who do we give credit to? We actually give credit to the holy name, because this holy name is so powerful that it actually can be that transformer to take it from the material consciousness to the spiritual consciousness. And therefore, we take shelter of the holy name. The spiritual master guides us in chanting so that the chanting becomes very pure. And therefore, the desires that are within our hearts, they get transferred also to Krishna and get purified. And this holy name is so powerful because it comes directly from the spiritual world and is non-different than Krishna. So you can have a connection all day. You can be in meditation doing the most simple things or the most complicated things during the day. You can be chanting the holy name and be transcendental. So this holy name is our number one activity in Krishna consciousness. Like we said before, we don't give it up for anything. And as I think you'll hear in the Russian discussion how difficult it was for them to chant, but they never gave it up. And therefore you see what's going on there now. It's all over that country, in big style. So this holy name also, it sticks with you. It doesn't ever go away. There's a very nice story of a woman recently that was a devotee that had done so much service in the Los Angeles temple, and she got dementia, and she was put into a nursing home and kind of forgotten by the devotees and her family. And then the devotees found her. She was getting ready to leave her body. And she had dementia so bad that she couldn't remember anything, but she remembered the holy name. And she would just chant. She would sing, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. She would chant the whole mantra, and there would be like one day of the week where she would get all the people in the old age home to chant with her. And it was like the most wonderful thing they did all week long. So that's all she could remember. The devotees came there, that she couldn't remember the devotees or anything, but she just would chant the holy names. So we can see the benefit, because the biggest transformation is going to be at the time of death. And we don't know if our tongue is going to be able to chant, but within our hearts, we'll never forget those holy names. And Krishna will see that, and he will definitely, as he promises, like I said before, he will accept us back to the supreme abode. So this is such a wonderful thing that we can hear over and over again, that yes, it's we're not this body, we're actually the spirit soul, but we have to do something about that. We have to somehow or other progress, and as we become into this bhakti mentality of always trying to serve, always trying to please Krishna and his devotees, then the heart will go with it, and then we'll see that all these symptoms actually naturally come. We won't worry about our honor and our dishonor. All these things naturally. We don't have to endeavor for every single different one of these attributes and qualities. It automatically comes just by endeavoring to please Krishna. So this is real transcendence, and we should realize that we do have a choice in this lifetime, whether to be caught in the net or become free. And especially if we can free others, that's the greatest thing, especially by distributing this holy name. I'd just like to read a couple of verses to end with about how wonderful this name is. More sweet than all other sweet things, more auspicious than all other auspicious things, the greatest purifier of all purifying things. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. There is no certainty when the last breath will come and put an abrupt halt to all one's material plans. Therefore, it is wise to always practice chanting from very childhood. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. It should be heard again and again with one's ears. It should be uttered over and over with one's voice. It should be perpetually sung and sung anew. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. It makes the entire universe seem insignificant as a blade of grass. It splendorously reigns supreme over all. It is full of eternally conscious divine ecstasy. It is supremely pure. The holy name of Sri Hari alone is everything. So should we beg, borrow, or steal, but get the nectar of the holy name and engage our tongue and always chanting and of course, tasting the remnants of the food offered to Krishna like we can do now. Even though it's cold out there, we have an opportunity to transcend the cold. Can anyone eat inside, or I guess something else is going on inside, huh? Could it be in here? We used to do that. I guess there's other things going on. No? Oh, it's warmed up. Okay. So do anyone has any transcendental experiences or any revelations they'd like to contribute so we can all become more transcendentally situated and attain Krishna's lotus feet? Or some other stories they'd like to give? Okay, if not, let's go take prasadam. Hare Krishna.